Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile, true crime podcast and audio bloody 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 blah, blah, blah. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back on Meander Mile again. This is the second week. We had the Soho one last week. This week we're going to go into Covent Garden. Quite a few people last week. This was quite interesting. Even though I've put some pictures on my blog and you can follow the episode via the pictures on my blog, some very novel people have been using Google Maps to follow me. So you can do that as well. So just to let you know, we're going to do a tour of Covent Garden. I'm actually outside Covent Garden Station on the corner of Long Acre. Looking down at my notes here. Whoa, what's going on? It's all crazy. So it's very busy today. You're welcome to follow me. I'm just outside the Covent Garden Station. It's a four-story building, one of the original old tube stations from the, I think it's 1880s, I believe, but I could be wrong. There's probably a big sign on it telling me how old it is, but I don't know because I haven't got it on my notes in front of me. Anyway, for those who are new to this episode, this is not a regular episode. This is Meander Mile. There's no sound effects added. This is all original sound. There's a car about to go past. There you go. Normally in the regular episode, that would be me adding that sound effect in, but this is all going to be natural. So I'm going to take you on a walk through Covent Garden. So we're walking forwards and we're going down James Street. Now, before we go down James Street, what I'm going to do, I'm looking at my notes and working out why did I do it this way? On Long Acre, there's actually a couple of murders that we haven't done on the podcast before, but I am hoping to do that soon. Just down the road from here, 126 Long Acre, is the murder of Helen Friedman, also known as Russian Dora. Now, you may have heard that story before, or me mention it before, especially in the Ginger Ray episode, because at 126 Long Acre on the third floor, location still exists today, you can have a look at that, Russian Dora, who was a former Jewish heiress. She was very impoverished. She'd been widowed. She hadn't got any money left. She landed into prostitution, unfortunately. Now, the press had claimed that she'd been murdered by the Soho Strangler, who is a name that you'll recognise from my tours that I do. But this is the second return of the Soho Strangler in the late 1940s. It is said that Russian Dora, as well as, here's some names that you'll recognise from the podcast, Ginger Ray from episode 7 and 8, Margaret Cook from episode 13, and Black Rita, hopefully coming soon, that they were all murdered by the same man who they call the Soho Strangler, the new one from the 1940s, not the old one from the tour from the 1930s. Now, she was found slabbed to death. What is going on with my voice today? I'm all over the shop. She was found stabbed to death in her flat, 126 Long Acre. It's still unsolved to this day. The original police file is in the National Archives. I just can't take it out, which is a real pain. So hopefully that's coming soon to Murder Mile. Not too far from here, just down the road from here at 31 Banbury Court, right by the Covent Garden Tube Station. This is one of those old stories that I quite like. 10th of May, 1852, David Belasco, who was a brothel keeper, killed Robert Clark. And the brothel was at 31 Banbury Street, as mentioned. The street's not there anymore, the building's not there, but the alley that is involved in the story is still there. Robert Clark was attacked. He attacked a sex worker, and he refused to pay up. at the end. So he was beaten up and he was thrown down the stairs and ended up dead. It was actually David Belasco and his three friends, three female friends who were prostitutes there, who beat him up and threw him down the stairs. Now, he later died of his injuries. They assaulted him, Robert Clark, and then they stamped on his head. David Belasco was given just 12 months in prison for that. Not very nice, man. Also on here, not too far from here, we have a story. I'm not going to tell you too much about this one. It's a story about David Crawley. I'm trying to work out what not to tell you. It's quite interesting. He was a homeless devil worshipper. This will be what the episode that will finish this our 10-part run of Murder Mile episodes. Obviously, next week you've got Roberto Troyan. That's a new episode coming out. Then you've got Elizabeth Wakefield, which is quite an interesting story. There'll be 10 episodes of that coming up. But this will be the final one that I think I might top off the series with. This is about a homeless devil worshipper called Edward Crowley, not his real name. Notorious Satanist. He murdered a 12-year-old boy. I'm not going to tell you any more about that, but that's not too far away. That's on Earlham Street, which is near, if you know Covent Garden, it's near Seven Dials. So, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take you down James Street. And we're going to head into Covent Garden. This is just outside Covent Garden Tube Station. Very busy at the moment. Lots of people. Lots of people standing around, milling, doing very little. Pretending to find things amusing, having coffee. Lots of rickshaws that really don't serve any purpose. A balloon modeler is here. Why? I don't know. What's that got to do with Covent Garden? I don't know. Lots of new stores. Tiffany have just opened up a new store. Because Covent Garden is now becoming posh. If you would have been here about 10, 20 years ago, absolutely horrible. Anyway, I'll give you a little bit of a history on Covent Garden. You can fast forward past this bit. You'll probably go, history, I don't care. In May 1670, King Charles II... see how tired I am today. King Charles II sessioned. What the flip is going on? You can tell that I need beer and cake. King Charles II issued a grant to the 4th Earl of Bedford to hold a market in Covent Garden's Piazza on every day of the year except Sundays and Christmas Day for buying and selling all manner of fruit, flowers, roots and herbs. Roots and herbs! So that was obviously three centuries ago. It's become one of the largest fruit and vegetable markets. It really was up until probably the 70s or 80s. If you watch a really good film, one of my favorite films, Frenzy, the penultimate Alfred Hitchcock film, that was shot in the 70s. Early 1970s, you can still see where Covent Garden was still a fruit market. Now it's kind of a market for, pretentious stuff. You know I love pretentious stuff. Anyway, if you walk around here, there's loads of blue plaques. I'm just walking past the White Lion pub at the moment and the Nag's Head. Two pubs on both corners, fantastic. Police siren in the background, that's not me adding in that sound. Wahlburgers is here. Obviously, it's that Marky Mark's new restaurant. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, Funky Burger, it is. If you go back to my Mini Mile episode about celebrities who have committed murders or crimes, you will see that Marky Mark was involved in a racist attack many years ago, which he has apologised for now. Just walking down the street, obviously we've got Michael Kors there and Skechers. And if you listen to No Such Thing as a Fish, their offices, I believe, are still on this street. It used to be a little while ago. So if you hear sounds in the background on their podcast and you can hear cheering and stuff, that's their podcast as well. They're in one of these buildings to the side. Just around here we have some street performers, all very exciting. Got one of those really pointless, do you know the people who dress up as what they call human statues or something like that? It's like years of drama school, and what have you decided to do with it? Standing still wearing a costume. That's me getting my little rant out of the way. So, let's move forward. As we enter the piazza, this is the piazza. The piazza is huge. Everything is kind of made of stone, sandstone, things like that. Just to my right is the Apple store. Very nice, very posh. Although they don't like you if, like me, you come in with your Samsung. Your Samsung and your Toshiba, they don't like it. a performer warming up there.
Check one, two, three.
Hi,
people of London, it's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen, apparently.
It's gonna be about 30 seconds.
It's gonna be about 30 seconds. I'm gonna move out of the way because he's talking waffle. So anyway, this is in the piazza. The piazza is kind of, it's a big square, basically. Piazza, as we all know, is Italian for square. It's a square. Let's call it a square, which is what it is. In front of us is the market hall itself. Used to be full of fruiteers and vegetable shop places. Oh, my brain's gone. But now, in front of me is Christian Dior. Yeah, because gone are the days where you need fruit. Now you need expensive jewelry and crap like that. So anyway, first murder in the piazza. This is as you enter the piazza. This murder happened here. So, 7th of April, 1799. Shortly after 11:30 p.m., Martha Ray, who was a singer and mistress of John Montague, the 4th Earl of Sandwich, was shot dead as she was getting into a carriage outside of the Covent Garden Theatre at the northeast corner of the Covent Garden Piazza. Oh dear, I'm out of breath today. Why am I out of breath? On the 7th of April, 1799, a few weeks after his ordination as a priest of the Catholic Church, Reverend Hackman followed Martha Ray to Covent Garden, suspected that Martha Ray had a new lover, and when Hackman saw her in the theatre with William Hanger, good name, third Baron of Coleraine, he left, fetched two pistols, and waited in a nearby coffee house. Basically, as she came out, he approached the ladies as they were about to get into the carriage. He put one pistol to Ray's forehead and shot her dead right on the spot. Don't forget, these are the days where you only had one shot per pistol and you had to put the shot in and you had to put the warden in her. He shot her dead, and then with the other one he tried to kill himself but only caused a flesh wound. He then beat himself and discharged, and with both pistols discharged, he was arrested and taken away. And he was a member of the Catholic Church. Lovely, lovely. Apparently he was absolutely obsessed with Martha Ray. And even though around that era there was the, you know, all about celibacy for priests and things like that, he was like, sod this, I love her too much. I love her too much. So as you can see, there's more performers down here. Well, I'm saying, as you can see, you can't see, can you? There is a man playing something. I don't know what it is. It looks like it's an interesting instrument that I don't recognise. It looks like a half horn.
Try and get that.
Half horn. That's all I'm going to say. Cool. Let's get out of the way. I'm passing Sushi Samba at the moment. We're just about to go to the first corner, and we're just going to take a turn just literally behind us. So where I'm facing now, I'm facing Tom Davies, the bespoke opticians. Just behind here is actually Bow Street. And you'll remember Bow Street from before. Before? How tired am I? My speech is all over the place. This is behind you is Bow Street, and in there is Bow Street Police Station and Magistrates Court. Now in there, Dr. Hawley Crippen. We haven't done him on the episode yet. He's very famous murderer, question mark. But he was charged there and he was sentenced to death for the murder of his wife, Cora Henrietta Crippen. I'm going to do a special about that case itself. Even if you know a lot about that case, there will be things that hopefully you won't know. That will be hopefully in season 4. And also in that court was the initial appearance of Ronnie Cray of the Cray Twins, our good friend Reg Christie, I wondered if you like a nice cup of tea, as well as many others mentioned in Murder Mile. Also, Bow Street Police Station was also the home of the Bow Street Runners, the forerunners of the Metropolitan Police Force. Evening all. Now, hopefully I'm going to do this story as well. This is, I'm literally about to get onto the corner. I'm still in the piazza, but I'm on the corner of Russell Street. So if you're following me on Google Maps, I'm literally just outside. Is it called Fruitons? I don't know. I don't shop in these places. There's a Starbucks there as well, and a Boucherie. All these places that I don't understand. Anyway, I'm focused down Russell Street towards where Frozen is on at the moment, and that is Bow Street. Hopefully we're going to do this soon. The Coach and Horses on literally around the corner on Wellington Street. It's straight ahead. It's actually a continuation of Bow Street. On the 20th of December 1940, 1940s, my favourite era. We all know that. The pub is still there today. It's Coach and Horses, a Canadian soldier, James Cale Forbes McCallum, good name, a 21-year-old Canadian sailor, was sentenced to death at the Old Bailey for the murder of, what was his name, Maurice Shulman. And it happened in this pub. I'm not really going to say too much about it at the moment because it's quite an interesting story. And it's going to be one of those ones that hopefully you'll listen to and you'll go, you'll think you'll know what way it's going, but then you'll go, oh, it's not. And no, it really is. Whew. Now, also on this, we're not actually too far away from a place called 35 Keble Street, just outside Covent Garden. It's actually a residential area. And this is the home of the first date killer. His name's Carl Taylor. This happened not too long ago. He murdered fitness instructor Kate Beagley. Hopefully that story will be coming soon to Murder Mile. There's loads of coming soon to Murder Mile on this. And not too far away, if we're facing this direction, so if I'm looking south and we're looking at about 10 o'clock, we're not too far away from Newgate Prison, which is where the Old Bailey is. We're going to be doing some more stories coming up soon about the Old Bailey, especially hopefully two of Britain's and the world's most prolific female serial killers, one of whom is Ada Chard. I'm not going to say too much about this, but this is, she was effectively a baby farmer. We'll explain more about that then, but basically, we've heard about this on the podcast a couple of times before, that it was quite a cruel era, especially if you're a woman, what was laid down by the law. The government wanted people, couples to all be married. They didn't want single women because it's against God and all that kind of rubbish. So they laid down the law that said, if you're a woman and you've got a child, the father didn't have to support the child. Or if you were unmarried, the father didn't have to support the child. It was down to you. So basically, you had to run 4 or 5 jobs at the same time in order to make sure that your baby had enough food and stuff like that. And if you couldn't, the child would be taken into the workhouse. We're not too far away from the baby killer of Bedfordbury, episode 3. And that's part of that story as well. It's the Poor Law Amendment Act of 1831, which really, really penalised a lot of women, not for being poor, but simply for just being female and not being married, having a baby and not being married. It was very unjust. So, Ada Chard was tried at the Old Bailey and executed outside the Old Bailey at what was formerly Newgate Prison. If you go to Newgate Street, that's where the outdoor execution site for the Old Bailey for the Newgate Prison used to be. That's until they moved it inside. They stopped doing public executions. So I'm not going to tell you more about the story. I'm going to leave that kind of slightly open. Yeah. But just like her, who was the other one? There's another lady who's one of Britain's most prolific serial killers, female serial killers. What was her name? I wrote it down. Amelia Dyer, of course. They were both executed roughly around the same time. Normally with public executions, you would get 10, 20, 30,000 people. If someone was really nasty, people turning up, that'd be how many you'd get in the audience watching it going, yeah, die, you horrible fucker. Sorry about my bad language. Then it cropped up. But when Ada Chard was murdered, a crowd of more than 100,000 people turned up. And when you consider that was turn of the century, that was 1900, and the population, like population of London now is 9 million. Population back then, I should have checked my notes before, but it wasn't anywhere near 3. So obviously a big amount of people, 100,000 people, that's a lot of people. So anyway, one of the world's most prolific female serial killers killed between them. Well, each of them killed, they reckon around 400 children each. But obviously they were impoverished children. No one really gave a shit around that time. They were just like, who cares? What's this? Oh yes, let's go down. Let's head down to Maiden Lane. So I'm gonna head down south along the piazza. Lots of people outside having teas, coffees. What they don't realise is they're paying £7 for a really, really piss poor tea and coffee. Ugh. But then again, it's Covent Garden. It's a tourist trap. It's a tourist trap. If you're coming to London, and you may think, oh no, he hates tourists. I don't. I just, when I'm a tourist, what I always do is go and visit. Ugh, get past here. What I always do is go and find places that are real, where the real people live. So if you hop around the corners, Don't go to the tourist trap, go to the other places and you'll find some really... I've gone the wrong way. Maiden Lane. Hang on, there we go. I'm back in Maiden Lane now. Oh dear. Sorry about that, folks. So, Maiden Lane. I was just saying, so if you come to places that you're unfamiliar with, don't do the touristy stuff. Go off to the side streets, find the places that the real people live. That's what I do. And I absolutely love it. You learn a lot more about the city from real people, not this tourist stuff. Tourist stuff is just BS. It's BS! Right, whoa, dear, I'm out of breath. Right, we're in Maiden Lane. Whoa, I'm tired. If you come on a tour in Covent Garden, they'll probably tell you the story about the murder of William Terrace. Whoa, William Terrace, wow. And you're probably thinking right now, well, who the hell is William Terrace? Back in his day, William Terrace was essentially the Brad Pitt of his day. He was a theatre actor who's incredibly famous, incredibly well respected. Everyone absolutely loved him. You put his name on a show and he would absolutely sell it out. Everyone was like, wow, William Terrace. But this is about his murder. So he was murdered by a disgruntled actor called William Archer Prince. This story may come to Murder Mile if I can cease my sarcasm, because it is a bit of a pathetic story. William Terrace was murdered by disgruntled actor Richard Archer Prince. William Terrace was an English actor known for his historic portrayal of Robin Hood and the revered Shakespearean performances. In 1897, when he entered the Adelphi Theatre in Maiden Lane, he was murdered by a deranged actor called Richard Archer Prince. There's actually a green plaque for William Terrace, but just behind it. If you're following me on Google Maps, I literally have just gone down Southampton Street. I'm on the corner of Maiden Lane, just outside the Costa Coffee.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh dear. There's a green plaque there at the moment, just outside the stage door, the backstage door. Where else would a stage door be? God, I'm an idiot. Of the Adelphi Theatre, that's at numbers 18 to 20 Maiden Lane. And this is where Richard stabbed William Terrace to death. My brain has gone. How tired am I today? Richard Prince, failed actor. He blamed his shitty career on William Terrace, because William Terrace was famous. He wasn't an arrogant man. He was actually quite a nice man, William Terrace. And he would help Richard Prince out. He would loan him money. He would try and put him up into various shows that were coming on, give him bit parts. He wasn't a good actor, Richard Prince, but what he would do was give him little bit parts here and there to help him out. And it had just got to the point where William Terrace had said, I just can't be asked anymore. He just can't be asked. He was helping the guy out so many times. And anytime he wouldn't help him out, Richard Prince would blame him for the demise of his career. And his career was not good anyway. Richard Prince was a bit of a shitty actor. At the trial, Richard Prince was found guilty but insane and sent to Broadmoor Criminal Lunatic Asylum, where he died in 1936. His relatively mild sentence was met with anger by the theatrical community, and Sir Henry Irving later quoted as saying that Terrace was an actor, so his murder will not be executed, meaning that the reason why they didn't execute Richard Prince for the murder of William Terrace was because William Terrace was an actor and therefore it wasn't taken seriously, which was bollocks. If you can go to the Old Bailey online, the court transcripts are on there. If you look at anyone else's cases, you will see that it says the lawyer turns up, they have one lawyer, it's kind of a junior lawyer, the lawyer says blah, 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 gives the evidence, and then they walk out. In this case, because it was William Terrace, because he was famous, everyone involved in this case is a QC. There's about five QCs, there's some serious expert witnesses. Everyone has been called in to try this case. So, to be honest, William Terrace was given every opportunity. But not saying that he deserved to die, but, you know, it's the unfairness of just because someone is famous, he should be treated any different than anyone else. Whew, I'm out of breath. I'm just shot back up on Southampton Row, Southampton Street. If I'm looking south, in front of me, I have the Strand just in front of me. I'm pretty much looking at the coal hole at the moment. And then beyond that is the Thames, just in front. You can't see the Thames from here, you can't quite. But soon we're probably going to do the story of the murder of Georgi Markov. Not really going to say too much about that. I think most people already kind of know it. Georgi Markov was a Bulgarian dissident who defected to London. This was in the 1960s. He worked for BBC's World Service. This gave him a fantastic opportunity to talk about the political views in his homeland, because he had the freedom of the United Kingdom. He was relatively safe in this country, but obviously his opinions made it all the way back to Bulgaria, and it didn't go down with the kind of the fascist regime who were running Bulgaria at that point. On the 7th of September 1978, Georgi Markov was standing at a bus stop on Waterloo Bridge, waiting for his ride home, when a stranger bumped into him and dropped their umbrella, apologised, and then moved on. Georgi Markov thought nothing of it. The guy apparently had a foreign accent. He jumped in a cab and disappeared. It was only when Georgi Markov went home that he was, he felt a stinging pain in his leg. He'd felt that when the guy bumped into him, he thought nothing of it. A couple of days later, that got really badly infected, and it turned out that what that umbrella actually was, it was actually a weapon. It had a very small pellet inside it, and inside that pellet was ricin. Highly poisonous ricin. Basically, it had been injected into his leg. He didn't feel it. It went into his leg. Ricin, one of the most dangerous substances known to man. It really is. If you have a look at my blog or go to the Mini Mile episode about poisons, it's mentioned on there, and I mention about how poisonous it is. It really is poisonous. That pellet was stabbed into his leg, and he died a couple of days later. Still, to ricin, there's no known antidote. Georgi Markov was dead within 4 days. This is quite an interesting piece. I might, if I can find an interesting twist to it, I might put that up as a companion piece for the Alexander Litvinenko episode, episode 20. So that might be coming soon as well. No real spoilers here, because some of these episodes I might put up, some of these episodes I might not put up. I don't really know. Now, we're just on, I am literally on the corner of Henrietta Street and Southampton Street. I'm actually on the top end of Southampton Street. I'm still literally on the piazza for Covent Garden. It's literally in front of me right here. This is a story, this won't be turned into an episode, but it's just something interesting. This happened in 1807. 19-year-old Anne Webb came to London from the country. She was lured into prostitution by a carpenter called Thomas Greenaway. He was a part-time pimp who went under the assumed name of Weeping Billy. His real name, Weeping Willie White. And he lived off women of immoral earnings, that's the way they like to recall it in those days, who lived in Southwark. He was a cruel man, so much so that one of the women who worked for him, I use the word work in inverted commas, it actually drove her to commit suicide. And therefore, Anne Webb, who we're talking about here, the 19-year-old lady who came to London, she left his protection, again, inverted commas. She was stood on her beat. This is her beat right here on the corner of what was named Higgler's Lane and Dirty Lane. So that is the corner of Southampton Street and Henrietta Street. I'll take some pictures. These will all be on the blog very shortly. Note to self, don't forget to take the pictures. Around that time, they were seen arguing. So Anne Webb and Thomas were seen arguing. At 2 a.m., she was found lying on the ground, her legs indecently exposed and parted. She was dead, and her genitals had been chopped off and thrown under a cart. Thomas Greenaway was charged for her murder, and although Anne Webb's landlady and other female friends were so scathing in their description of Thomas Greenaway, aka Weeping Willie, he was acquitted through lack of evidence. I'd love to go and actually find the... I might do this as a kind of mini extra... Maybe I'll do this as kind of a Patreon-only episode or something like that. But I'm interested to get the... Oh, I'm saying a lot at the moment. How tired am I? I haven't eaten. I'd be interested to get the... I'm turning into Boris Johnson. It's almost as if someone has asked me what I do as a hobby. Did you see that? Check out that video. What Boris Johnson does as a hobby. Hilarious. I would love to go and get the Old Bailey case notes just to see what was going on with there. Because when it says lack of evidence, I have a feeling it will be of that era where they just say they deny all of the evidence given by the prostitutes. Because even up until the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, 70s, it's still, in a lot of police records, it still says the prostitutes, therefore... they're all liars. If you go back to the Ginger Ray episode, spoilers, episode 8, with the Tory politician, I reckon killed Ginger Ray. They said even though he was found with covered in blood around the corner from where she was murdered, and his face was scarred with a set of keys, which was like her calling sign of that, what she would do if anyone was going to attack her. Police said that he was a man of good character, but all the prostitutes, they said, they're all prostitutes, therefore they're all liars. Even though their evidence was fantastic. Whew. Anyway, so I'm just going to go round the corner here. I'm heading north, heading up into the piazza. I'm going to take a little left down to Henrietta Street. This is something I quite like doing ever so often. I love films. I love film locations. Whenever I'm in King's Cross, I always go looking for the locations for the Lady Killers. One of my favourite films, 1956 Lady Killers, Ealing Comedy, Alec Guinness, Herbert Lom, Peter Sellers. Oh, what more can you ask for? It's one of the greatest films ever. I absolutely love it. So the locations are all in King's Cross. But just in front of me now... at number 3 Henrietta Street. Oh, it's gone all weird. Oh, I don't like it. Number 3 Henrietta Street. Have a look at this building now. I'll take a picture of it for you. It's not a murder location, but it's actually the first floor is the location for one of my favourite Alfred Hitchcock films. It's a penultimate film, Frenzy. If you listen to that, that's where William Rusk, I believe the name is William Rusk. He was the killer in that piece. He lived on the first floor, and they shot most of it in there, and they used a Covent Garden. Have a look at it. It's really fascinating. It's one of those, I think you can download it for free off YouTube, I believe. It's not a great copy, but it'll do. Whew. So, a little annoying child chasing pigeons. Why do parents let their kids do that, chase pigeons? It's like if a giant pigeon chased their child, they would call the police or the army and have it shot. Anyway, I'm on the corner of Henrietta Street, so literally, if I'm facing north now, to my left, we're not too far away from the Baby Batterer of Bedfordbury. Not too far away. That was my episode 3, one of my early ones. Interesting, I can't remember who asked the question on my podcast, on my discussion group, Greaser. It was Gloria, wasn't it? Thank you, Gloria. You posed a very good question yesterday, as I'm recording this, saying... which of the Murder Mile episodes could people only listen to once. Not because of lack of quality, I hope, but because obviously it was too taxing, too kind of horrific to listen to. And it was really fascinating. The ones that people came up with were the Bedford Bury Baby Batra, the Charlie Churgwin one, what was the other one? Oh, the wife beater of Alexander Moyer. So literally, Alexander Moyer is to my right, is literally about a 2 minute walk away on my right. To the left, a 2 minute walk away, is the baby batterer of Bedford Bury. That's James John Richardson killed Thomas, Thomas James Mills, his 2-year-old son, who was found guilty by insanity. If you haven't listened to that episode, it's quite horrific, but it's really interesting. It gives you a good insight into mental health care in that era, and, well, really a lack of mental health care, and how, as mentioned before, the Poor Law Amendment Act was stacked against, very much against women, and there was no help for any of them, really. Even though one of them was the murderer, one of them was ended up dead. Actually, all three of them, if you haven't listened to that episode, were all victims. I'm just going to go into Covent Garden. This will be the west side of Covent Garden. As I approach up here, there's lots of public performances. I'm just outside the Nat West at the moment. but it was here, there's actually a sign not too far away, that this is where the world's first Punch and Judy was ever performed. If you're from outside London and you don't know about Punch and Judy, Punch and Judy, it's basically a puppet show about a puppet called Mr. Punch who enjoys beating up his wife. Yeah. It's a harmless, funny tale about domestic abuse. But because it's traditional, we still keep it going in this country today. I think they've probably changed bits and pieces here and there to make it a little bit more sanitary for kind of modern audiences, but it still exists today. Oh, just to say, so I'm heading north, so behind me, we're not too far away from Charing Cross Station. Charing Cross Station will crop up a couple of times in the podcast coming up soon. Whether I'm going to do this one, I'm not too sure, but John Robinson, on the 10th of May 1927, staff at Charing Cross Railway Station. Oh, that was a burpee then. Ooh. Sorry, I just had a pint of lemonade. It was very nice, very nice, but it's made me burpee. On the 10th of May 1927, staff at Charing Cross Railway Station noticed an unpleasant smell in the left luggage department, where they found the dismembered body of a woman. Concerned by the foul smell in the cloakroom, a lady was discovered inside the trunk. I'm not going to tell you any more about it because I'm still researching that at the moment. I'm trying to find an angle for it. You know me, I don't like to tell the story just as it is, so that might be one coming soon. If we're facing north, not too far from here is St. Martin's Lane. We've mentioned it before. That is not too far away from... A man is clapping by himself. That's very weird. Not too far away from Elsie May Batten. You remember the one about the Edwin Bush? He was the young man. He stole a dress sword. He went into a shop. He stole a dress sword. He killed Elsie May Batten because he wanted to take the dress sword and then sell it so he could buy an engagement ring for his girlfriend. We mentioned this in the last episode. And this was the first murder that was convicted by Identikit. We mentioned this in the last one. That's not too far away. So that is St. Martin's Lane. But I haven't done this on the podcast yet. I'm thinking about doing this. There's a pub called the Salisbury. Very good pub there. I booze there quite a lot. It's quite an interesting place. So between Dennis Nilsson... Ah, Dennis. Between Dennis Nilsson's first and second murders, if you haven't listened to my two-parter about Dennis Nilsson, episodes 11 and 12, about the victims who survived Dennis Nilsson, go and listen to those. They're very interesting. Or come on a Murder Bar walk and you'll learn more about Dennis Nilsson. Ah, Dennis. So between Dennis Nilsson's first and second murders, there was a year gap between. Dennis attempted to murder Andrew Ho, a student from Hong Kong he had met in the Salisbury Public House. It still exists there, still looks identical as it did back in his era, which was the late 70s. Although questioned by the police, the student decided not to prosecute, and Nilsson was released without charge. These were one of many attempted killings by Dennis Nilsson. So it's interesting, if Andrew Ho maybe would have prosecuted him, Maybe he would have been stopped. Maybe less people would have been murdered. We don't know. We don't know. Whew. And I'm just going to go to the... oh, there. Out of breath. I'm going to go past this public display that's on the moment here. What's going on? What's going on? I don't know. A man talking to lots of people and lots of people cheering. Oh, sorry. Lots of people cheering. I just bumped into a man. That's what happened. I just bumped into a man. So I'm just passing St. Paul's Church, the back end of St. Paul's Church, heading towards Oakley, where you can get some very overpriced sunglasses. And this is an interesting... my brain is gone. So this is the final story that I'll tell you in this section. Now, many of you have probably heard the story of Birkenhair. Birkenhair, obviously, based in Edinburgh. They were the body snatchers. There was a really awful film by John Landis about them recently. Meant to be funny. It was... John Landis has really gone off the boil. Anyway, they were the body snatchers. This is about the Resurrection Men. This is what they were called. And Covent Garden has its very own body snatchers, the Resurrection Men. So, whew, damn, out of breath. Michael Shields, one of the famed London Burkers, aka the Resurrection Men, he killed people to sell their bodies for the medical profession at King's College School of Anatomy on the Strand. So that's not too far from here. That's literally one street away. On the 27th of September, 1899, my phone, literally, I'm getting my notes on my phone, it jumped a page down, and then it started saying, Ada Chard, as I have done Ada Chard. There we go. Oh, this is why, unfortunately, I need my notes for this one, because these are cases that I haven't investigated 100% yet, so they're not fully in my head. Michael Shields, Thomas Williams, and John Bishop. If you like British comedy, it's not that John Bishop. I'm a cheeky comedian, and John Bishop, I'm a cheeky comedian. That was my John Bishop impression. Maybe I'll save that for Mini Mile. Hello, cheeky John Bishop, the comedian. Michael Shields, Thomas Williams, and John Bishop offered the body of a boy for sale to Mr. Partridge, demonstrator of anatomy at the King's College, for 9 guineas, not a hell of a lot of money. The appearance of which was so suspicious, and it was quite clear that the young boy had been hit over the head with a blunt instrument, that Mr. Partridge, the demonstrator, having detained the men on pretense of changing a £50 note, £50 note, that seems a lot, sent for Thomas, the police superintendent, and had them taken into custody in order that they might satisfactorily account for the possession of the dead body. The case was opened at Bow Street Magistrates Court on the Saturday night, and it was more minutely gone into by the Tuesday at the Unicorn Public House just around the corner on Henrietta Street. This was back in the era where even though they had Newgate Prison and the Old Bailey just around the corner, they didn't have jury room, so if they needed the jury to kind of discuss the case even further, they would book out a room in a pub and then take them there, and then the jury would sit there for a couple of days having a couple of beers and having some fun. They did that with the Alexander Moyer case that we've mentioned before. So hopefully I'm going to do a little bit more about the Burkers, and hopefully that will be coming to Murder Mile soon. Obviously, as I said before, I need to find something interesting, something different and interesting to tell you about that case. But all three men were arrested here in Covent Garden, where I'm standing now, just outside Oakley, and they were tried at Bow Street Magistrates Court. Whew, that was that. Did you enjoy that? Was that good? That was, it's slightly easier for me to do. Where am I going? I'm gonna take a little walk down King Street for a moment. I'm just outside Burberry. But there we go, that was that episode. I hope you enjoyed that. That was Meander Mile, the Covent Garden one, Meander Mile 2. Next week, you are going to have the Roberto Troyan episode. That will be 10 murder miles in a row. I've done 2 of them already, so I'm slightly ahead. So you don't need to worry that I will turn around and go, oh, I've got no time to do this. Literally, I do have time to do this. It's all very good at the moment. Everything's going rather well. So that'll be that. That'll take you to September, October-ish. Then we will do probably the Meander Mile in Rye, I'll do one in Brighton as well, because I need to do some research in Brighton. Then we will do a mini mile. I think there will be about six episodes, and then that will take us to the final part, the multipass that we're going to end the series with, and then that will take us right to Christmas, and then I can have a little break. So I hope you enjoyed that. That was a little bit shorter than I planned to do, but we did a good walk there. I think we did about half a mile, and my pedometer, as I like to call it, my pedometer on my wrist has told me that I've just, how much have I done? I think it says I've passed 11,500 pedos. Unless that means steps. I think it means steps. So I've done 11,500 steps, but I've probably passed around 11,500 pedos as well. Anyway, that was that episode. Hope you enjoyed it. We're going to be back next week with more fun. Thank you so much to everyone, and I wish you all well. Ta-ta!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.